You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.
Hello there, and you're very welcome to Tech Thursday. This is Patrick Sheehan. I'm going to be with you for the next hour or so, looking at all the latest in tech and answering any questions you might have. As always, you can call 069-66200 or you can text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800. And I will answer any questions you might have on the next show. You can also email patrick102fm@gmail.com if you want to send in your questions by email. And to start off with today, we have a question from James. And James is in Adair. And James said that he is going on holidays in the coming weeks and his phone doesn't have the best battery. He says he has a Samsung Galaxy S21. And he wants to know, what would I recommend power bank wise for his holidays? He says he has a long flight with a long layover. And he wants to have his phone throughout. So I've been looking at some of the best portable chargers, but I suppose for convenience-wise, and it's something I've done myself with a few of my previous phones, is I've actually bought... Now, the only thing is it's a very one-product item, but it is very convenient, is a power bank case, which, you know, there is a few drawbacks, but there is a lot of... It's very handy for convenience, so... It's a case with a battery built in and you clip your phone into it. Obviously, your phone becomes a lot bulkier, but you have instant power on tap all the time. So when your phone runs low and if you have no cable nearby, if you're sitting in the middle of an airport and there isn't any power cables around, you can just turn on the case in the back and it will start charging your phone. And some of them have up to like 10,000 plus, you know, milliamp hours. So on most average phones, it could probably charge them two or three times. So it's very, very handy, even if you have a full day's flight, say if you're flying for 23 or 4 hours, you'll still have enough to keep you going. Normally you'd say, oh, sure, I only charge my phone once a day anyway, and it lasts for the day. But when you're traveling, you'll be probably browsing a lot more. You'll be watching videos or listening to podcasts or things like that. You might have headsets plugged in, so the battery can run down a lot quicker. So it probably does help, all right. Plus, you might be taking photos and things like that, taking videos, which can use up a lot of battery. So a charging case is handy, but there's a few, as I said, a few downsides. Is it's bulky. It's also could be potentially a heating problem, considering your battery and the new battery will be very close to each other. So they could be kind of generating heat from each other and it could cause some heating issues. But I haven't had that problem now in any of them I've had. And usually they're kind of, they have some kind of layering or some kind of protection system built in to avoid that as much as possible. But it is a possibility. But then you have your... So you'd have to buy one then specifically. You'd have to look up a Samsung Galaxy S21 power bank case. And it's very handy then. You just put it in your pocket and everything is ready to go. You don't need cables or anything like that. The inside of the case has a USB-C cable or a USB-C port insert kind of that plugs into your phone as you're putting it into the case. And then the outside of the new power case has a... USB-C port as well. So you can actually, if you wanted, say, before you leave or whatever, you can charge up your phone and charge up the battery kind of at the same time on some of them or individually on other ones and have them all charged up and ready to go even while the case is fitted. So it's handy for that. And then you just throw it in your pocket and you have it ready to go. So I do find those convenient as long as it doesn't affect the phone, you know, it doesn't overheat the phone or anything like that. But I haven't found so. But that's the cases. But there's also chargers as well. There's also, and I've bought and used plenty of those as well over the years. So I suppose it's all about the milliamp hours. But although some, you have to be careful about some of the websites that mightn't be as trustworthy because the figures they give, I've definitely got one in the past that promised like 50,000 milliamp hours. And then I charged my phone twice and it's like it's out of power. So it's definitely not. It should have been charging it 10 times, but it didn't. So obviously the figures were very, they just threw on a few extra zeros there to make it look better. So you have to proceed with caution when it comes to the numbers. Generally, if you get the good brands or, you know, there's brands like Anker and some of the famous electronics brands out there should be fairly on the ball. It's usually the generic names that could be dodgy, all right, the names you've never heard of that mightn't be as trustworthy. But in when it comes to power banks, I've looked up an article here on Wired, and it's looking at a few different ones. It's giving it doesn't say the milliamp hours of a lot of these, but it gives you names of some of the good brands anyway. And most of these would have enough for a charge or two anyway. The best overall, this says, is the Nimble Champ Series 2. It's $21 on Amazon. This is a small one, though, so maybe it's a one charge kind of one. The upgrade pick is Anker 7. So this is better than the best one, but slightly more expensive, or a good bit more expensive, because the last one was $21. This is $110, but it's Anker. Anker years ago were kind of a budget brand, or were like a good, very good quality for the money, kind of very cheap prices, but very good, but decent quality. And now they're a kind of an upper end brand, or a kind of a, they're more well known for their good quality. So Anker 737 power bank, $110 is the best upgrade pick. So if you want a higher quality one, if you've got a bit more money to spend. Best for phones is the Anker Nano power bank, $30 on Amazon. So some of these are not too expensive, but I'm not sure about the sizes of them. Best for, they use them on tablets and everything as well. Best for tablets is the EINOVIA Eggtronic ultra fast power bank, 63 watts. So some of the tablets might need a bit more power, or some of the laptops that you can even charge off a USB-C would need maybe 60 watts plus to be able to charge them. Portable devices have a Murphy's law like ability to run out of power at the least convenient moment. As you step on a bus, right in the middle of an important meeting, or just as you get comfortable on the couch and press play. But if you keep a battery-powered portable charger handy, these situations are a thing of the past. There are hundreds of portable battery packs, so they go through the different details. But you can get different speeds of charging as well, not just capacities as well. So if your phone is fast charge capable, if you have one of those Xiaomi's or different ones that have like 65 or 120 watt fast charging, you can get fast charging battery packs as well that will charge it up quickly and then get you on the go again. So you can, there are the two things. Some of the other things you can look for, the capacity and the speed of charging. Some have multiple plugins as well, so you can charge multiple devices at the same time, but you have to watch out a bit there. Some of them divide the power. So if you have 60 watts and you divide it into two devices, it could be 30 watts per device. So you might be able to like super fast charge the devices. Plus, some of the ports, I've seen ones before that had USB-A ports and then a USB-C port, and it said fast charging, but it was only the USB-C port that would fast charge. The USB-A, say the traditional, the full-size USB ports wouldn't fast charge. So you have to check all those kind of things in the specs. Best overall, the Nimble Champion. So we looked at that. Oh yeah, so it gives a few more facts and figures here. 20 watts, it can deliver 20 watts. So it's a not exactly fast charge, but it would probably be fine for many iPhones and things like that that wouldn't have fast charging anyway. It has the Pro version is a bigger, but doubles the capacity to 20 times. So it has 10,000 milliamp hours. So that wouldn't even fully charge most phones. It'll just kind of get you out of trouble, that one. So that's why it was $21. It's a pretty small battery, but it'll just, if your phone is dead and you need something to bring it back and get you up to 10% or something like that to keep you going, or to take a call or something like that for emergency kind of things, is you can get one of those. The Anker one then is the bigger one, I presume by the size of it. It has this is 24,000 milliamp hour capacity, so that has a much bigger battery. It weighs almost 1.4 pounds. It's relatively compact for its capacity, but it weighs almost 1.4 pounds. It has a circular power button on the side, and snazzy digital display shows up the remaining percentage. It again you get stats including temperature, total output, cycles and more. So this is a kind of a fancier one, but it is 110 quid, the Anker 737 one. There's an Anker one that plugs into the bottom of your phone as well. So it's like an extension of your phone. It'll plug into the bottom of it. And the only thing is, if you have to be careful then how you hold it and things like that. If you don't want to put pressure on that, because it's putting all the pressure on the USB port itself on the phone and on the thing itself. It's a solid unit that just plugs in the bottom of your phone. So I don't think, for me, there wouldn't be the most convenient for that. I'd rather have a cable going into it or something like that, although you can avoid doing that, I suppose. But if you can hold your phone in one place, if you have your phone on a stand or something like that, ideal, where nothing is going to be hitting off of it. But if you're holding it and if you dropped your phone or something like that with that plugged in, it could damage the port potentially or something like that. That's the Anker Nano power bank, 30 quid, and it's 5,000 milliamp hours. So that should, most batteries are around that or a little less than that, so it'll fully charge most phones once. So that's quite handy. This is a bigger one. It's like a one that's like the size of a large phone. Wired reviews. So this is the Innova Eggtronic Ultra Fast, 63 watts. So that's a 63 watts. So this is a fast charger one. It has the capacity to recharge an 11-inch tablet twice from 0%. It's capable of dishing out 45 watts of power for fast charging via the USB-C port and 18 watts from the middle USB-A port. Yeah, so the USB-C is a faster charging port on this one. But even the 18 watts is about average for most of these. 45 watts is very good. In a pinch, you can use it to recharge a laptop as long as it's not a power-sucking machine like a MacBook Pro. It has a lovely fabric material on the exterior. So this is the Innova Eggtronic Ultra Fast, and it's 47 quid. I suppose for the specs, it sounds pretty good. We can charge most tablets two times. So 20,000 milliamp hours is the capacity. So that seems like a good all-rounder, actually. You have your high-speed charging, which is usually expensive. You have multiple ports. You have a 20,000 milliamp hour capacity, which is very good. That's a pretty good all rounder. The Innova Eggtronic Ultra Fast Power Bank, and it's kind of just looks like a giant phone itself, but it's blank with like cloth on the outside of it, and it has its ports in the bottom, and you can plug in three devices at the same time. So if you had your smartwatch and your smartphone, and does it have wireless charging? Some of them have a plate on the outside where you can just lay your phone on top of it. It doesn't say here, but it has the. It doesn't show any phone on top of it either, so I presume it's all wired. That could be a quite handy one for on the go, and you can plug in multiple ones at the same time. So that gives a look at some of the power chargers and something to keep you going on your holiday and enjoy your holiday. Best of luck with it. So we're going to have a look at some of the latest in tech. And it says here that about 60% of Irish consumers are unaware about the impact of e-waste. An Earth Day survey by Swappy highlights the urgent need for e-waste education as the world's generation of e-waste rises five times faster than documented e-waste recycling. As the world celebrates Earth Day, Swappy, Europe's largest iPhone refurbisher, has unveiled a dire need to educate people about the impact of e-waste. The alarm bell comes as a study by the United Nations reveals that a record 62 million tons of electronic waste was produced in 2022, up 82% from 2010, on track to rise another 32% to 82 million tons in 2030. The challenges of dealing with electronic waste. Swappy did a pan-European community survey to gauge people's knowledge and awareness about sustainability habits, carbon footprint and the impact of electronic waste on the planet. The result was startling and urgent need for more awareness across all age groups, shedding light on widespread ignorance regarding electronic waste and its consequences. Globally, the annual generation of electronic waste is rising by 2.6 million tons, while the documented recycling rate has dropped from 22.3% in 2022 to 20% in 2030, as recycling efforts fail to match pace with the monumental growth of electronic waste generation worldwide. There's an awareness gap. 62.7% of Irish respondents were unaware of the projected 82 million metric ton increase in e-waste by 2030, equivalent to discarding 1,000 laptops every second. Personal impact on e-waste: around 25% of global respondents correctly estimated their annual electronic waste production. Knowledge of iPhone carbon emissions: 22.7% correctly identified that it emits approximately 82 kgs of CO2 in its first year of life. I didn't know that now, that they were emitting CO2. So does that mean electric cars are also emitting CO2? Or is it just less than the petrol cars? There was something about the braking on electric cars was higher than petrol cars because of their extra weight or something like that, and that was actually causing pollution as well. But maybe they can work on some more environmentally friendly brakes, brake pads material and tyre material and things like that. 61.6% rated their concern as 4 or 5 on a scale of 1 to 5, indicating high levels of worry about their personal environmental footprint. Sounding the alarm, Lucia Velasquez, country manager for Ireland, Swappy, says these survey findings underscore the critical importance of raising awareness about electronic waste and its detrimental effects to our planet. It's evident that there is a strong desire amongst customers to make a more informed choice to mitigate their impact on the environment. But the buck doesn't stop here. They want to inform more people about environmental preservation and things like that. So yeah, definitely some products you buy have way too much packaging than they probably need, and booklets and things like that. You know, nowadays you could give a QR code and, you know, somebody could scan and get all the information they need, rather than a big thick booklet that never gets read and everything like that, where you could give a QR code or something like that. Maybe that might be a new thing that they could bring in. You know, I know they say, oh, what if we sell a new phone, and they don't know how to set up the phone, and they have no phone to check it because they're after buying a phone. So, but I'm sure there's somebody else, you know, in the family or somebody, you know, or that would have a phone that could check the QR code, or a different device or a tablet or something like that. So that might be a way to save things. You know, I know they're cutting down on cables and chargers and things like that as well, which is good in some ways and bad in other ways. Then when you get a fast charging phone, and then your old slow charger will only slow charge it, and you have the capacity in the phone to do 65 watts, and you have an old 20 watt charger, so you don't get to use the fast charging capabilities of the device. So you have to go and then buy a fast charger and make sure it's the right compatible one, because there's different. I have a charger at home that's 65 watts, but it will only charge one device. It'll charge my wife's phone fast. It won't charge mine because it knows it's not the. It's like a Realme phone, and it's a Realme charger, 65 watt charger. But it won't fast charge my phone. It only normal charges it. But when I use I have an anchor plugged in with a cable on that, and that will fast charge either of them. But some of the chargers that came with the phones, fast charge chargers, will only fast charge those phones, which is, maybe that's a rule they should bring in. That would save a lot of waste. Imagine if you have, I suppose you can buy the generic ones, like I have the Anker one that will fast charge anything, but they should maybe make the manufacturers not have specific compatibility when it comes to fast charging. So you can plug a Xiaomi or a Google Pixel phone or any other phone into any other brand charger that has fast charge capability, and it should fast charge them. You know, there should be they should go to the QI. They should have to follow maybe the QI standard, where it's just for everybody. It's a standard plug-in. Like I was saying, they should do with cars, have one plug for all the electric cars. Which would make it easier as well, rather than 10 different adapters that they have at the moment. Apple's new AI model hints at how AI could come to the iPhone. Apple teases a new generative AI feature, but what kind? Apple has been quiet about its plans for generative AI, but with the release of new AI models today, it appears that the company's immediate ambitions lie firmly in the make AI run locally on Apple devices realm. So they want to make it faster. So, you know, on my phone, on the Google Pixel and on some other phones, if you take a picture and you want some AI trickery done to it, some background removed or something like that, it has to go to the cloud, and then the magic happens on say Google's Photos app or something like that, and then you have your photo fixed and it looks amazing. But it's going into the cloud, it's been done there and then sent back to your phone again. So Apple want to have the software built in that will be able to run it itself, so it'll be much quicker. So you can do kind of instant AI trickery, remove stuff from the background or unblur kind of older photos to make them look sharper and things like that. But I think some of it needs AI, some of it needs the vast knowledge of how images should look and things like that. I think that's what they use to fix old photos. Like, it guesses how it should look, and it kind of repairs it going by from millions of other photos to sharpen things. It kind of fills in the missing pixels. And so I don't know how that would be done all built in, unless they have a program made that kind of has all the most common fixes built in, and it can do that based on the program that's built into it. Rather than looking online, it kind of has the general fixes for what the job is, and it doesn't need to search all of the internet for making a picture run blurry or whatever. They have their own version of it, so it'll be interesting to see how it works. Probably will be faster if it's built in software, so, and that'll be good. Researchers from Apple released OpenELM, a series of four very small language models on the Hugging Face model library. On Wednesday, Apple said its Hugging Face model page that OpenELM, which stands for Open Source Efficient Language Model, performs very efficiently on text-related tasks like writing, like email writing. The models are open source and ready for developers to use. It has four sizes, 270 million parameters, 450 million parameters, and 1.1 billion parameters. If I had to guess, this open source model, they want people to come in and help to kind of build it for them and to give suggestions and give help programming it and everything like that. And just like OpenAI, when everything is up and running and working well, they'll close it all off and they'll close source it. So that seems to be the way a lot of them are going at the moment, and OpenAI was of course the big one that way. The parameters refer to how many variables a model understands in decision making from its training data sets, for example. So this is what the model that we're on about here is not to do with photography, it's to do with using prompts to say make an email and send it to John O'Connor and tell him I'll meet him on Thursday and explain why I'm not able to attend due to medical reasons or something. And it'll write the email out for you and make it look perfect, like you wrote it yourself kind of thing. So that's you can just give brief prompts with some of the things you want to highlight, and it'll flesh it out for you and make an email. Create an email for you, so saving yourself having to do that or something like that. Parameters refer to how many variables a model understands in decision making from its training data sets. For example, Microsoft's recently released PHI-3 model bottoms out at 3.8 billion parameters, while Google's Gemma is a different one, offers 2 billion parameter version. Small models are cheaper to run and optimized to work on devices like phones and laptops. So there'd be less parameters. In other words, it's not searching the whole internet. It's just using its limited parameters that are kind of built in and that are all stored on the phone or laptop. Apple CEO Tim Cook teased that generative AI features will be coming to the company's devices. saying in February that Apple is spending a tremendous amount of time and effort in the space. However, Apple has yet to share specifics on what its use of AI might look like. The company has released other AI models before. It hasn't released any AI foundational model for commercial use like its competitors have. In December, Apple launched MLX, a machine learning framework that ideally makes it easier for AI models to run better on Apple Silicon. It also released an image editing model called MGIE, which lets people fix photos with prompts. Another model, Ferret UI, could be used to navigate smartphones. Apple is also rumored to be working on a code completion tool similar to GitHub's Copilot. So they're working on a lot of things in the background. They might be behind everyone nowadays, but they do usually make good versions of these things that work quite well and are double the price. The Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses have multimodal AI now. So these have been out for a while. Ray-Ban's glasses with like dual cameras built in, and it can talk to you and has AI kind of built in, and it can see what you see and tell you what's in front of you and give you navigation directions and things like that. It can be handy, confidently wrong, and just plain finicky, but smart glasses are a much more comfortable form factor for this tech. This is in The Verge. When the Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses launched last year, they were a pretty neat content capture tool and a surprisingly solid pair of headphones. But they were missing a key feature, multimodal AI. Basically, the ability for an AI assistant to process multiple types of information, like photos, audio, and text. A few weeks after launch, Meta rolled out an early access program, but everyone else had to wait. For everyone else that did wait, the wait is over. Multimodal AI is coming to everyone. The timing is uncanny. The Humane AI pin just launched and belly flopped with reviews after an universally poor experience. It's been somewhat of a bad omen hanging over AI gadgets. But having messed around a bit with early access, AI beta on the Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses for the past few months, it's a bit premature to completely write this class of gadget off. First off, there are some expectations that need managing here. The Meta glasses don't promise everything under the sun. The primary command is to say, hey Meta, look, and you can fill in the rest with phrases like, tell me what this plant is, or read a sign or different language. See, I said at the beginning that I thought it had sat-nav built in and things like that, could give you directions, but I'm not sure. That could be a different one I'm thinking of. It could be the Apple Pro that I'm thinking of. It helps to write Instagram captions, identify and learn more about a monument or landmark. And the glasses can take a picture of the AI communities with the cloud, and an answer arrives in your ears. Possibly not limitless. And having the fun is figuring out what its limits are. So that could be kind of fun. For example, they say that the writer says their spouse is a car nerd and their own pair. With their own pair of these things, they also have early access to the AI, so their life has become a never-ending game of can Meta's AI correctly identify this random car on the street. Like most AI, Meta is sometimes spot on and often confidently wrong. One fine spring day, my spouse was taking glamour shots of our cars, an Alfa Romeo Giulia and an Alfa Romeo Tonale. Don't ask me why they love Italian cars so much. I'm a Camry gal. Correctly identified the Giulia, and the Tonale was also a Giulia. So the AI wasn't able to tell the difference between the two different cars. So a lot of these things are in our early days. Even folding phones and stuff, the screens are still scratchy and things like that. You have to be careful with them. But they're getting better and better as the new models go on. So I'm sure it's the same with AI. And same with these wearable tech, other wearable tech items. So Tesla is planning to put new models into production in the second half of 2025, including a more affordable model that was previously reported to be cancelled. Tesla says it will build a more affordable electronic vehicle, perhaps as soon as 2025, refuting recent reports that Tesla CEO Elon Musk had cancelled plans for a cheaper Model 2. Vehicle in favor of getting a robo-taxi out the door. but Musk didn't clarify whether the lower cost EV would be brand new for Tesla or a simplified version of its current one of its current vehicles. In terms of a new product roadmap, there has been a lot of talk, Musk said during the company's first quarter earnings call, addressing the concerns investors have expressed over the past month about the delayed plans for a low-cost EV. We've updated our future vehicle lineup to accelerate the launch of new models. Musk said we might see the vehicles in early 2025, if not later this year. The vehicles will blend aspects of a next-generation platform with the current platform that undergirds the company's top-selling model, the Model 3, and also the Model Y. This is not contingent on a new factory or a massive new production line. It'll be made on our current production line much more efficiently, Musk said, predicting it could accelerate the company's production to over 3 million vehicles a year. Tesla has reported $21 billion in revenue for the first quarter of 2024, a 9% drop year over year. Net income dropped 55% to $1.1 billion, and the company sold fewer models this quarter as demand for electric vehicles has cooled. Analysts say more affordable models are crucial to Tesla's future growth. The only downside, though, of affordable models when it comes to electric cars is the very low driving range. So if you buy a 1 liter car instead of a 2 liter car, you actually have more range. A lot of the time you can actually go further on one tank than you can on a 2 liter car, you know. So, but with electric cars, when they shrink them down, they usually shrink the batteries too, and the bigger ones, the more expensive ones, have 400, 500, 600 miles of range, and the cheaper ones have often 150 miles or 120 miles of range or something like that, which can even go down further as they age as well. I was talking about in the previous episode about a secondhand car, and it was like a Nissan Leaf or something like that, and a 2013 one that a person on a YouTube video I was watching bought, and it had less than 50 miles range from fully charged. So, you know, it was if you're going anywhere at all and coming back again, if you went into Limerick to the Crescent Shopping Centre and wanted to come back out again, you wouldn't have enough battery. So that was kind of pretty much unusable for those kind of journeys. So that's the one downside to a lower cost one. Now, what might be ideal is if they do a lower spec one, and we'll say a single motor, say a rear wheel drive, five door with, you know, lesser specs. It doesn't have to have every trick in the book, a smaller screen even, but have a good size battery, have a good big battery, and have that single motor, an efficient motor, where you can get your 400 miles range or something like that, you know, 500 kilometers, whatever, a good long range at a low price, and that might be a good way to go about it. But I know more batteries is more weight and more expense as well. So it's difficult. It's a difficult one. I also heard people talking about efficiency as well. It's like with petrol cars. Say, once you're running low on petrol, your car is also lighter as well because it has less petrol in the tank. But the batteries never get lighter. You know, whether they're full or fully charged or completely empty, they're the same kind of weight. So that's another kind of downside as well, that the car doesn't become more efficient as it loses energy. It stays the same. But hopefully the technology can be further improved to increase capacity, and, you know, using the likes of graphene, which has been talked about for a long time, where you can have a solid state graphene battery, something like that, that can be actually part of the chassis of the car, and it can, you know, charge up in 5 minutes and then have enough charge to last you for the week, where it can do like 800 miles of capacity after that, and it actually passes out the specs of car. And I'm sure that's coming in the future. It's just not exactly there yet, but, you know, it's being artificially kind of pushed because of environmental reasons and things like that, which is, I suppose, fair enough. But it's not done the old-fashioned way where the petrol engine or the steam engine or whatever it was for trains and things like that has passed out the capacity for using horses or bicycles or something like that. But it will get there eventually. There's a lot being invested in new technology and things like that, and all the big motor manufacturers are investing a lot of money on developing battery technology and everything like that to try to come up with the next generation of electric vehicle that can get people to buy more of their cars. So somebody comes out with a super fast charging 800 mile range car, everybody's going to jump over and buy those, and they'll be the biggest car company in the world. So there's definitely an incentive there for improvement, and hopefully it will keep going. Oh, speaking of which, Sony's own car is coming to Gran Turismo 7 for free at 11 p.m. Or 2 a.m. Eastern time. This was on the 20th, so it's today. Yeah, so if you like me, you play Gran Turismo 7, you'll be able to get Sony's Afila prototype as part of GT7's free update before the real vehicle is released. We would like to see how many people as possible ride it in the game. Please enjoy, ride Sony Honda Mobility. You also get a Skoda Vision Gran Turismo concept created exclusively for the game, and a 1970 Chevelle SS 454 Sports Coupe. Very good. I have to give the fine 30 minutes to spare now this evening, maybe to play a game of that for a while. Zuckerberg says it will take Meta years to make money from generative AI. There are several massive ways to build a business here, Meta CEO warned investors, but it's going to take time and be costly. The generative AI gold rush is underway. Just don't expect it to create profits anytime soon. That was the message from Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg to investors during Wednesday's call for the company's first quarter earnings report, having just put its ChatGPT competitor in a bunch of places across Instagram, Facebook and WhatsApp. Much of the call focused on exactly how generative AI will become a money-making endeavor. So he says it's not going to be made a money-making endeavor anytime soon. The PS5's community game help feature has arrived. You can update your console now to gain access to the feature, which offers community-generated hints for supported games like Granblue Fantasy, Relink, and the upcoming Stellar Blade. That's actually very handy to get some tips and things like that sometimes, because it does happen to me sometimes. I'm playing a game and I just get stuck at a certain part, and now usually if I leave it and come back to it, I'll pass it, but it can be handy to watch a video, a tutorial or something like that, how somebody else got through it, and oh, that's what you do, you jump up here and you solve this puzzle or you do something else, and then you can get past that section and then you're flying then again. But I did notice yesterday actually on the PlayStation 5 that they have added a lot of the movie apps and things like that in the, they've kind of upgraded their display a bit, their kind of UI in the front, and they had Amazon and Disney and Netflix and YouTube and all that stuff up. It kind of looked like a Google Chromecast TV, like an Android looking face on one of the in the Discover section or something like that. So they are they have cleaned up their kind of multimedia section as well, so I noticed that was done with the update, so that's pretty cool. But I'll have to check it again this evening for the Gran Turismo updates. An update on how Threads is doing. The app now has 150 million monthly users. Mark Zuckerberg said on Wednesday during that meeting we talked about earlier, there were almost 100 million monthly Thread users in October. Some people were saying that's a bit skewed as well, because they're kind of using Instagram to artificially kind of inflate Threads as well, and it mightn't be specific Threads users as much as they're making out. And the metric I'd write, it looks like they agree here on the Verge. The metric I'd like to see, however, is its daily users. Meta is juicing the visibility of Threads posts in the Instagram feed, and I've heard that a lot of user growth has been coming from that drive by traffic. So you're in Instagram, you click a link, or you click a photo or something like that, and all of a sudden it Threads opens up, and they count that as a view then, or they count that as so they're kind of using Instagram to boost Threads. I've heard a lot of user growth has been coming from that drive-by traffic. If it really wants to kill X, Meta still needs to build a sticky experience that more people come to daily. Yeah, so like I have Threads. I've set it up only recently, really. And anytime I've gone in and out of it, it's just there's kind of nothing happening there. And it's just like scroll a bit and it's like a clone of Twitter, but just with nothing happening. And there's a lot more happening, a lot more, you know, all the celebrities and everything signed up for Threads when it happened. And, oh, we're all leaving Twitter. But then they're just not active on it. Nobody's kind of using it, or they're just, it's just kind of copying and pasting stuff from Twitter and things like that. So it's kind of, it didn't really take off to the degree that they were hoping for. WhatsApp for iOS is rolling out passwordless logins with passkeys. Passkeys comes to the iOS app a few months after the Android version. One more app joins the passwordless future we've been promised. WhatsApp says it's now rolling out support for passkeys on iOS, on the iOS version of the app. With the feature enabled, users of Meta's encrypted messaging app can use iPhone's biometrics, use the iPhone biometrics for login, that's Face ID or Touch ID, on their phone's passcode. WhatsApp already supports unlocking its iOS app with one of these options. It's actually very handy now on a lot of different apps. I don't have to be typing in passwords and stuff like that. You can use the passkey. And it can generate passwords. I was afraid to use that before. Do you know there's the one that pops up and says, would you like me to generate a password for you? And it generates. And I said, like, I'm not going to remember that. Or, you know, I was worried about using it because if it doesn't find it the next time or something, what am I going to do? But no, it's very good. I tried it once on an app that I wasn't that bothered about when I was setting it up first. I said, oh, I'll let it work away and generate a password for me, and it generated RXYZ lowercase b, you know, and all this big long password that I would never ever remember. But then it saves it, and so it's very handy. And then when I went to go back into it again, it just automatically filled it in and things like that. A lot of the apps now are set up with fingerprint, which is very handy. And it, you know, if anybody stole my phone or something like that, they wouldn't be able to get into anything because it's all fingerprint. It all has a dual factor authentication or uses passkey, which is a fingerprint or a face ID or something like that. But mostly fingerprint, I think I set it up for. So very handy. And it makes things much quicker as well. Passkeys are supposed to be the secure, or at least more secure, even passkeys have trade-offs, wave of the future version of authentication that does away with passwords and SMS two-factor authentication. It also means you can sign in whenever you're not connected to a network, since your phone holds the authentication key. To see if you have the feature already, WhatsApp says you'll see if you go to settings, account and passkeys. Rollout like this can take time though, so you can check your iPhone if you have it there yet. I think I have it set up already a while back on my Android phone. Spotify is struggling to get Apple to approve its iOS updates in the EU. Spotify wants to place pricing information directly inside the app for EU customers after claiming that Apple ignored its previous update request. Spotify submitted a new version of its iOS app that should give users in Europe in-app pricing information for subscriptions made outside of Apple's payment system, provided the update doesn't get stonewalled by Apple again. According to TechCrunch, the latest version of the app doesn't contain a direct link to subscription plans on Spotify's website, something the company hoped would allow it to skirt the 30% cut Apple takes on subscriptions made via the App Store. Instead, EU users will be directed to manually visit Spotify's website via a web browser in order to purchase cheaper subscription plans. A previous version of the app that did contain website links was submitted by Spotify last month, and Apple didn't approve the update and neither acknowledged nor responded to the submission. So Apple still want their cut, even though the EU are telling them they can't do that, and it's they're getting a cut of something they have nothing to do with. According to Spotify, the company says the latest version is trying to get approved features, the bare minimum pricing and website information as outlined under the European Commission ruling that fined Apple $1.84 billion, about $2 billion, €1.84 billion. The EU's ruling followed a four-year investigation into App Store rules that prevented music services from advertising cheaper subscription deals outside of the iOS platform. That investigation itself, spurred by an antitrust complaint Spotify raised in 2019 over the 30% Apple tax, found that Apple had abused its dominant position in the market by preventing developers from telling their customers about cheaper alternative services. Yeah, so that's crazy. The best penguin bar jokes are being celebrated on World Penguin Day. McVitie's surveyed 2,000 people about their favourite jokes from the wrappers of the biscuit treats. The top joke was, what is the name of the emperor penguin? Julius Freezer. Also featured in the top 10 is, why are penguins good racing car drivers? Because they're always in pole position. Oh no. The North Pole or the South Pole. One part of Dublin has seen numerous films and music videos shot in the area and is to be celebrated. A plaque will be unveiled in Ringsend tomorrow by the local historical association. The General, In the Name of the Father were all filmed there, along with music videos for the likes of the Cranberries and Boyzone. Yeah, so very good. Anyone visiting Venice for the day will now have to pay a fee. A €5 charge comes into force today for tourists making a day trip to the Lagoon City. Inspectors will be conducting random checks with fines between €50 and €300 for those who haven't brought a pass, who haven't bought a pass. Those who stay overnight in Venice are not subject to the charge, but do have to pay a city tax for hotel stays. So you have to pay a fiver to visit Venice. Some of the British military horses that ran loose through central London yesterday are said to be in a serious condition. The animals caused mayhem when they bolted, spooked by builders moving concrete. Four people are understood to have been injured, though not seriously. Britain's Defence Minister James Cartledge says the two badly injured horses, Vilda and Quaker, are still alive but not in good condition. Let's see what he had to say.
There were five horses. They have all been recovered. Three of them are fine. Two of them are unfortunately in a relatively serious condition. And obviously we will be monitoring that situation.
Yeah, so there was clips of that went viral yesterday on all the different platforms. I saw a couple of videos of horses flying through the middle of London. So they obviously got spooked and they escaped and they kind of ran around the place. But unfortunately they got hurt as well. So that's very sad to see. Researchers say plant-based alternatives to meat, cheese, eggs and yogurt need to be labelled more clearly so it's obvious which ones are ultra-processed. A study from London's School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine says nutritional value can vary hugely between products. They say many are still healthy, but the ultra-processed ones are higher in fat, sugar and salt, and may contain chemicals, colorings, sweeteners, and preservatives. Yeah, some people think, you know, when you see vegan or vegetarian straight away that, oh, that's healthy now. But not necessarily, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of sugar involved. And as I say, you know, as it says, there are a lot of different chemicals and colors and trying to make it look or taste like meat and things like that. So they have to do a lot of manipulation for that to happen. But I'm sure there's a lot of others, and if you just go, you know, there's nothing wrong with straight vegetables and things like that as well, rather than imitation meats and things like that, that would be a lot healthier, but it doesn't always mean healthy, so that's a good thing to watch out for, is the actual ingredients inside. Taylor Swift's Tortured Poets Department has become Spotify's most streamed album in a single week. It's been played more than 1 billion times. It had already racked up 300 million streams in a single day. So yeah, I haven't heard any of those songs though or anything like that. It's very strange. She's hugely popular and you know, she's the biggest star in the world and everything like that, but her songs aren't really, you know, they're not exactly super famous, like Beatles songs or something like that. It's kind of, she's more famous. And she's like, oh, Taylor Swift, so that massive tour, and she was earning so much money, and everyone go to see Taylor Swift. But her songs aren't really, I don't know, aren't really, you know, I'd know one or two, but I wouldn't know too many. A lot of people couldn't name four or five Taylor Swift songs, even though she's massive. She's the biggest star in the world, but it seems to be more her than the music. It's strange. The possibility of TikTok being banned in the US has moved even closer. US politicians have voted to give the company's Chinese owners a year to sell or face a total shutdown. China's government has said it's a private company, it shouldn't have to sell, and will refuse to do so. Technology editor at the Irish Independent, Adrian Weckler, says that's a very public stance is curious.
If you are one of those who suspects TikTok of actually being potentially under Chinese control, you're now saying, well, why would it matter if the Chinese government said A, B or C on this? Surely you're independent from the Chinese government. So the fact that the Chinese government appears to have actually some meaningful say in all of this doesn't look great for TikTok.
Yeah, it's funny. We have nothing to do with it, and we will not be shutting down. It will not be shutting down. And, you know, there was, yeah, that's a good point, actually. It's like, why would they have anything to do with it? Why would they say we will not be shutting down if it's nothing to do with them? Yeah, so in other words, they're running it, and it's a... All you have to do is look at TikTok in China and look at TikTok in the US and stuff like that. And in China, it's all about kids. Oh, you can be doctors and you can be lawyers and you can be astronauts and everything like that. And it's all educational and inspirational and everything like that. And in America and other places, it's all trying to make people as crazy as possible and pushing crazy politics and dividing people and have people arguing and everything like that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the coming year. There's a call for fast fashion to be taxed to encourage consumers to be more ethical with their choices. Fianna Fáil's MEP Barry Andrews is calling for a levy to be placed on ultra-fast fashion goods, which are produced through the means of forced labour. The proposal comes as the European Parliament voted to ban the import of goods from forced labour conditions yesterday. Dublin MEP explains how such a charge would work.
An environmental charge would discourage fast fashion. That's fast fashion that contributes to major environmental damage and add costs there. And so it would be a charge at the point of sale, and the proceeds could obviously be ring-fenced to ensure that other environmental programs are financially supported.
And our last story for today, NCT Service have revealed a common but largely hidden reason for your car to fail its NCT. Irish drivers dread attending an NCT with their car, as recent figures revealed that half of all cars tested in 2023 failed the minimum standard test for roadworthiness. Most of us are familiar with the big ticket items that will see our cars returned with that failed report: tires, brakes, suspension, steering, and so on. However, another reason highlighted this week is corrosion that could be hidden under parts or above wheel arches. NCT Ireland's posted to say that corrosion is a common fail for NCT. It can make vehicles extremely dangerous to drive and can seriously reduce the strength of a component. They used a single example to shine a light on the issue. NCT Ireland also recently revealed a number of other little-known visual reasons your car could fail an NCT. Taking a few minutes to check some of the visual items and ensuring they are working in advance of your NCT could potentially save you valuable time and money. One of the more obscure items you could easily forget to check is the little bulbs on your registration plates. Yeah, I failed for that once. My car years ago, Yaris, had one of the two bulbs was blown and I didn't realise it over the number plate at the back, and it failed because of that. It is a legal requirement that your registration is visible at all times, and these bulbs aren't working. It cannot be seen at night. Your car could fail its NCT if its registration plate lamps are not working. Yeah, so... You can see full NCT visual checklist below. Windscreen wipers and washers, reasons for failure: missing, not cleaning windscreen effectively, Wipers are less than sufficient to give the driver an adequate view. Washer not working or no water or incorrectly aimed. Seat belts, reason for failure. Belts are cut, badly frayed or repaired. Belts not working properly. Tire condition, reasons for failure. Treads are worn, distorted or damaged. Tread depth is less than 1.6 millimetres. Incorrectly seated on the wheel rim or the valve is damaged. Registration plate lamps, reason for failure, not working, faulty or not fitted, not white in colour, or lenses missing or broken. Stop lamps, reason for failure, missing or clearly not clearly visible, not working or faulty, and not brighter than taillights or insecurely mounted. Indicator lights, reason missing or not working, faulty, insecurely mounted, not amber in colour. The horn. Control insecure, horn insecurely mounted, not working correctly, not working or fitted. Registration plates, one or both plates are missing, insecure, not visible. Numbers or letters missing or illegible. Numbers or letters or background of incorrect colour. Side lamps, reason for failure, missing or not clearly visible. Not working or faulty, not white in colour, insecurely mounted, contains water, moisture, lens missing or broken. So there's a few different things there to watch out for on top of your normal emissions and all that other stuff that you'd be doing for your NCT. And so that's been Tech Thursday for today. Hope you've enjoyed the show. As always, you can call 069-66200 or text or WhatsApp 0871-66900 or email patrick102fm@gmail.com, and I'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.